Welcome to the conference.
So Natalie,
please note today's call is being recorded. Please stand by.
Welcome to the NQF Dual Eligible Beneficiaries Workgroup web meeting. Please note that today's call is being recorded. I now turn the program over to Alice Lind. Alice, welcome to the program. Let's get started.
Thank you so much, and welcome to all of you. Great to see so many of you could join. I'm sure these days are pretty harried for you, getting ready to have a few days off, as they have been for me. And we promise that we will move through the agenda with great dispatch and succinctness, and perhaps we'll maybe even be able to end a little bit early compared to the time blocked off for you today. So I really appreciate you all making the time available. We are going to be going over the very most recent meetings of the other MAP work groups and talking about the outcomes from those work groups. And through our conversation today, we'll be able to make recommendations for the MAP Coordinating Committee, which meets early in January. We'll talk about the processes that go along with that pre-rulemaking work. We'll hear from the NQF staff on each of these topics, and we also will be able to get some input from the workgroup liaisons about the most recent meetings. We'll be asking for your input at key points throughout today's web meeting. And all the workgroup members, by the way, are on open lines. So on the one hand, that gives you the opportunity to feel free to speak up during the breaks that we have and opportunities for you to chime in. On the other hand, you should probably make sure to keep your phones on mute if you're not participating in the conversation. We also will have a couple of pauses for general folks to give input as well. So this slide shows you the busy 3 weeks that have been happening for the MAP. All MAP members, some of you as well, met via the web meeting on December 4th. We used that opportunity to share with other MAP work groups our progress on the interim report on high-need subpopulations and our perspectives about pre-rulemaking content in general. And as you see, all of these work groups have been meeting up until just today. The hospital group had a little follow-up meeting even today that is just coming to a close. So hot off-the-press information will be made available to you during this meeting today. We want to just return to the timeline here to show the many tasks for this work group over the course of this year. We met twice this fall before starting the pre-rulemaking work, and as you can see, those meetings that we had are shown in the blue. The meeting that we are having right now is it has a red circle around it, so you can follow this bouncing ball from the MAP Coordinating Committee input back down to where we are currently meeting. We will submit the interim report on our first set of high needs subgroups next week. And again, thank you to so many of you giving input on that report. It's due to HHS on February 1st. And after that, we'll begin the pre-rulemaking report is due to HHS on February 1st. After that, we begin another series of meetings to continue our work. And I think all of you know that we're trying to get a meeting scheduled in March. And so you'll hear more about that right around the corner. The next slide shows our goals for today's web meeting, which are to review and discuss the results of those work groups that we just saw a slide about, clinician, hospital, and post-acute care, long-term care. And secondly, to provide additional cross-cutting input to the coordinating committee regarding the applicability and appropriateness of measures for dual eligible beneficiaries. We're going to go ahead and do a roll call to make sure which of our work group members are on the call. I think some of you know that Tom James is no longer on our work group. He left his position with Humana, and we now have George Andrews, who took his place, and welcome to Dr. Andrews. We'll just go through briefly. If you just want to let us know that you're on, I'll just read off the list here on the right side. So Margaret Nygren. Sally Tyler. Operator, can you just confirm that folks can chime in and say that they're present if they're on the call?
Yes, one moment. Okay.
Thanks. So, Margaret, are you on the call? And Sally Tyler? Jenny Chin Hansen? David Polakoff? Alfred Chiplin? Clark Ross?
Hi, this is Clark. I'm here.
Oh, I was going to say, I know that Clark's on, so I'm just checking to make sure that the phone lines are open. Thank you, Clark.
It works.
Dr. Andrews?
Here.
Laura Lenneback?
Here. Laura's here.
Thanks, Laura. Stephen Council? And Joan, we're counting on you're participating on the one work group.
I am here.
Assuming you're there. Hi.
I am.
Leonardo?
Present.
Thanks. Adam Burrows? And Rich Bringawatt? Okay. Next slide. Mady Chalk, are you on? And Ann Cohen?
I'm here.
Hi, Ann. Jim, are you there? Jim Dunford?
I am. Can you hear me?
Yes, great. Thank you. We're counting on you to chime in, too. Juliana Preston?
I'm here.
Hi. Susan Reinhardt? Rhonda Robinson-Beal? And Gail Stewart? And then federal work group members, Deb Potter?
I'm here.
Great. Deb, we're counting on you to chime in, too, later. Cheryl Powell?
I'm here as well.
Hi, Cheryl.
Hi. Samantha and I Meckler. Can talk this time. I'm very excited.
Yeah. You have your voice back. Yay. Samantha Meckler, are you on?
I am. Thanks.
Hi. Someone substituting for Henry Claypool, and I'm sorry I didn't catch who was that.
Hi, Alice. This is Marisa Scala-Foley.
Oh, hi, Marisa. Thank you for joining today.
Sure, thank
Frances
you.
Frances Potter, are you on? Fran? And Daniel Kivlahan.
Present.
Great. Thank you so much, everybody. If the operator, if you can make sure that people have their lines open when it's time for a work group discussion, that would be great. So the next slide, we just wanted to talk quickly before moving into the work group update. Thanks. Okay. To talk about how our work contributes to the MAP pre-rulemaking. The first slide in this group is just to share again that the measure selection process cycle. HHS has published a list of measures they're considering for future use in many quality programs. So that's the information that MAP has been analyzing and reacting to. CMS shared their goals on the All MAP web meeting for that. And so the slide shows the cycle for implementing measures. When CMS talked about this, they shared a few things about the measures and the cycle. I've mentioned this to a couple of people that's kind of mind-boggling, but almost 500 new measures are under consideration. Most of them are under consideration for the clinician program, PQRS, and most of the rest of the programs have fewer than 20 measures to consider. So that helped in those other work groups that the clinicians had much of the burden here. External stakeholders contributed to and support the majority of measures on that list. Many of the measures contained in the list are NQF endorsed or are pending NQF endorsement. Measures in the list are for use either in mandatory or voluntary reporting programs, and CMS was turning to MAP to help with alignment and prioritization. So, again, the three setting specific work groups have met and focused on the federal programs that are applicable to these three different types of care. As you know, we recommended that MAP should support any measures in the evolving core measure set when they're under consideration for an HHS program. So liaisons from our group joined the hospital and PAC LTC meetings, and we provided written guidance to all of the groups. That's synthesized in a document provided as background for this meeting, and you should have been able to find that in your resources. Sarah can pipe up if any of you have questions about that when we get to the discussion. But overall, the message of this group was communicated clearly to these other MAP work groups, and so there's a lot of positives that came out of that and that we're excited to share with you today. So we wanted to remind you of the measures on these next two slides that are currently included in the evolving core set for dual eligible beneficiaries. Less than half were under consideration for addition to a program. Many are already finalized for use in one or more of those programs. So on this slide and the next, you can just for your edification, just to remind you where our core set has landed since the last time that we met. So I'll pause here just to make sure if anybody has any questions before we move into the first of the three work groups.
Alice, this is Samantha. I'm sorry. Can you just repeat, of the core set for the duals, how many are in existing programs?
I don't know if I have a number. Sarah, do you have a number?
It's 18.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Sarah. Okay, we'll go ahead and start with
Alice.
Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Alice, this is Dr. Andrews. Just for my own clarification, in identifying the measures and making a recommendation across the various work groups, is there an attempt to identify measures that cross different settings that are, if so, selected? The different programs will be supported at the various settings and thus have a higher yield or impact as relates to the member?
Yeah, that is a really good question, Dr. Andrews. So the unique role that we find ourselves in as the dual eligibles work group is that dissimilarly from the setting-specific work groups, we are the one work group whose mission is to see how do these measures work across settings of care. And so that's why you see many of our measures are cross-setting kinds of measures, like how do the transitions of care work, for example, or what happens when someone's been hospitalized? What follow-up do they get after hospitalization for mental illness? So many of our measures are, not tied to particular settings or particular provider groups. And part of the reason that we, find ourselves needing to just make sure that our input is felt in those other work groups is because of our unique perspective on that. It's just natural that the hospital work group, for example, thinks of, if you are asking us about such and such a measure, are we the right entity to have that improvement attributed to, or is this really a shared accountability kind of measure? Well, in the dual eligibles work group, we're all about how does the integration of the system work to support people no matter what setting they find themselves in.
Alice, this is Tom Balick. If I could just add to that,
yes.
So to our new member, Dr. Andrews, first of all, that was a great question because it has been a question about how the role of the MAP in general can foster the kind of alignment that your question points to across the system. Even though we're primarily looking at measures on a program-by-program basis, at least through this pre-rulemaking process, the MAP strategic plan, which was developed over the spring and summer of this year, probably the primary theme beyond selecting the best available measures for these programs and identifying gaps that remain is actually the alignment theme. And one of the big promises that the MAP can bring to the system is helping to point to measures and measurement, use of measurement information and use of measurement for these incentives through payment public reporting is to help align these efforts not only across the federal programs but also across federal and state programs and across public and private sector programs. So you'll see in the pre-rulemaking report that comes from this discussion that you all are contributing to today that the alignment theme will be a major part of the discussion in that report. So just wanted to remind the group that in the strategic plan, this is not only a unique place where the duals work group has a perspective across settings naturally, but it's also an intention of the whole body of MAP's work.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks. That was a big help. Do you want to say anything, Tom or Sarah, about the family of measures approach, too? I think that helps kind of just underline that topic.
So this is Tom. I know that Sarah could do this equally well, but as Alice is pointing to, the MAP has adopted a tactic of identifying families of related that transcend specific settings or specific programs and really are meant to get at this cross-setting, cross-program consideration. The families are meant to incorporate the best available measures but also identify gaps so that as you're looking at a topic area for the family like safety or care coordination or a high-impact condition like cardiovascular disease or diabetes, the task forces who put together these families for MAP looked at the best available measures and the gaps across settings and programs. And then that serves as guidance when we get into these detailed measure-by-measure pre-rulemaking considerations for specific programs. If those measures tie back to families that cross these settings and programs, then even though we're looking at a program-by-program basis, those measures should relate across the programs and help tell a more comprehensive, coordinated, patient-centered story of quality.
Thank you so much. Any other questions before we move on? It was helpful to get everybody grounded. Okay, perfect. Aisha, next we'll have Aisha Pittman, who's a senior program director at NQF, introduce the most recent work of the clinician work group, and then we'll turn back to some group discussion about that. So, Aisha, thank you.
Hi, good afternoon, everyone. I'll be covering the clinician's work group progress. This first slide is also covered in your materials that are available to you on SharePoint. Your work group provided input to the clinician work group and all of the other work groups as well. And this should summarize what some of your key points are, that clinicians can deliver high-quality care to eligible beneficiaries by focusing on management of chronic conditions, particularly mental illness. Clinicians and care teams have a major role in facilitating care transitions, and clinicians should really focus on screening and assessing opportunity areas to address the eligible beneficiaries, particularly giving attention to management of symptoms, medications, and risks.
We are having some difficulty hearing you, just to let you know. I'm sorry.
Okay, I'll make sure to talk louder. Is this better at all?
Much better.
A lot better, yes.
And then overall, your work group urged the clinician work group to focus on alignment opportunities presented in your evolving soil measure set. So this next slide highlights the programs that the clinician work group reviewed. The first three programs are really related to one another. The Physician Quality Reporting System is a pay-for-reporting program. Physician Compare is a public reporting program. And the Physician Feedback Slash Value-Based Payment Modifier is a payment program. All of the measures that are in PQRS, the measures that are in PQRS feed into Physician Compare and the Value-Based Payment Modifier. We also looked at the Medicare and Medicaid EHR Incentive Program, also known as Meaningful Use.
Aisha, you're breaking up again.
Sorry about that. We'll keep working with the mics here, and I'll make sure that you guys can hear me. We also looked at the Medicare and Medicaid EHR Incentive Program, which is also known as Meaningful Use. And then we also reviewed measures in the Medicare Shared Savings Program, which is a system-level program. I will note that the hospital work group also reviewed the Medicare Shared Savings Program. Just to give you a little bit more context about what the clinician work group did over their two-day meeting, they reviewed over 700 measures across the PQRS program, Physician Compare, and the Value-Based Payment Modifier. And that really it speaks to how all of the three programs are linked. So any measure under consideration or current finalized measure for PQRS is also under consideration for Physician Compare and the Value-Based Payment Modifier. PQRS currently has about 250 measures in the program, and we had about another 250 that were under consideration. We were also asked to look at any measure under consideration or current finalized measure for the Hospital Inpatient Quality Reporting Program and the Hospital Outpatient Quality Reporting Program for consideration in the Value-Based Payment Modifier. This proposal came from a wanting to consider how to address clinician reporting for hospital-based clinicians. And so for that set of measures, it would potentially be that the hospital performance rate would be assigned to the hospital-based clinician. So it's really a way to focus on alignment and get more measures that are applicable to hospital-based clinicians. Because we had such a volume of measures, the clinician work group input was focused on the types and categories of measures that were most valuable to public reporting and payment purposes rather than having specific input on individual measures. And I'll get to our principles that help guide that input. So thinking about how the dual core measures incorporate into clinician programs, many of the measures in your evolving core measure set were already currently finalized for use in clinician programs. And similarly, the clinician work group has a preference for outcomes and composite measures. Particularly, we noticed some of the same gap areas that your group has noted, wanting to see additional measures of patient engagement and behavioral health across all of the clinician programs. And then there's also, the clinician work group has also had a focus on functional status assessment measures. While there were some measures under consideration, the group really would have preferred to see measures that assess maintenance or improvement of function over time, whereas the measures that were under consideration were just looking at point in time. From the measures specifically in your evolving core set, there were four measures that were under consideration for PQRS, which means they would be new to any of those clinician reporting programs. The four measures you see listed here. And based upon our principles, which I'll go through shortly, the clinician work group would support all of these for inclusion because they are endorsed. And in thinking about measures for public reporting and payment programs, based on the principles, they would also likely be incorporated into the physician compare, the value-based payment modifier. The group just didn't get to looking at specific measures for those two programs, and we hope to reconvene the clinician work group in March to think about which of those specific measures would be useful for those programs. So that leads me into the guiding principles for applying measures into the programs, and I'll go through each one. For the physician quality reporting system, which is the pay-for reporting program, one of the major goals of this program is to really encourage clinician participation. So with that, trying to meet that need, the work group wants to include all NQF endorsed measures that are relevant to clinician reporting. For measures that are not endorsed, we looked at the ones that are currently finalized and would recommend that measures that have been previously submitted for endorsement and were not endorsed or had endorsement removed or in reserve status, which essentially means that they're topped out. Any measure fitting that would then be recommended for removal from the program. Thinking about measures that are not endorsed that were under consideration, if anything has previously been submitted for endorsement and was not endorsed, we would not recommend that. But then the group wanted to identify measures that would support alignment. So, for example, measures that are used in clinician maintenance and certification programs would be useful to add to the program before they're endorsed. Also, any outcome measures that address areas that are not already addressed by the program measure set. And then measures that are clinically relevant to specialties or subspecialties that don't currently have clinically relevant measures. So really thinking about are there any measures that aren't endorsed that can help encourage greater clinician participation. Because PTRS is just pay for reporting, the group saw this as a program where you could add measures to the program that aren't endorsed and allow through PTRS some opportunity to test the measure and gain some experience with it before it's submitted for endorsement. Moving on to Physician Compare, which is the public reporting version, and this is where we did not provide specific input on any individual measure. The group really wants to think this program should focus on NQF-endorsed measures that focus on outcomes and measures that are meaningful to consumers, purchasers, and providers. They had a large emphasis on patient experience, functional status, care coordination, population health, and appropriate care. And to generate a comprehensive picture of quality, measure results should be aggregated, so using composite measures, but then also having drill-down capabilities on the website for specific measure results. I will note that Physician Compare is new, and so it's not there. While the site is up and running, quality measures are not reported on the site currently, and that is scheduled to begin in 2020. For the value-based payment modifier, which is the payment program, again, here we did not provide specific input on individual measures, but wanted hope to do so in the future following these general principles. So again, we want to include any NQF-endorsed clinical quality measures that can be associated with a particular cost or resource measure in hopes of capturing value. There were a few cost measures under consideration, and the group supported the direction of those measures, noting that cost measures should only be added to a program when clinical quality outcome measures can be linked to it. Other clinical quality measures in the program should focus on outcomes, composites, or process measures that MAP has determined are proximal to outcomes. So that would be measures that are process measures that were selected for inclusion in the MAP family of measures or measures that were involved. We also thought that any of the measures, as this is a payment program, that the program should be continually monitored for unintended consequences that could affect vulnerable populations. And that was one recommendation that was your group had shared before that the clinician work group really took up and wanted to make sure we incorporate it in our work. For the Medicare, Medicaid, EHR incentive program for eligible professionals, which is also known as meaningful use, the group, again, here wants to include endorsed measures that have e-measure specifications available. And over time for this program, they would like to see the measures move away from a lot of very condition-specific-based measures and move more towards measures that are HIT sensitive, meaning that they provide information on whether electronic health records are changing care processing, or HIT enabled measures that require data, measures that would essentially require data from multiple settings or providers, or longitudinal and really get to needing to have an HIT enabled collection platform to be fully operational. So there were some additional considerations that are overarching across all of these programs. One is that there's really a need for a core set of measures that all clinicians, regardless of specialty, can report across all programs. The core set should focus on patient experience and engagement, coordination of care, and population health. Again, as we think about what that core set would include, we would look to your evolving core set of measures to think about what are those cross-cutting measures that can reasonably be that any clinician could reasonably report. We also wanted to note that measures should be tested at the appropriate level of analysis before they are incorporated into public reporting or payment programs. One thing that we've seen some of the measures under consideration might work better at a system level and have some issues regarding attribution and denominator size when applied to individual clinicians. So while some of those measures might conceptually be in the right direction, the group recognized that there should be ongoing testing. And we thought that the PQRS program can serve as a mechanism for early testing measures. And so we open it up to discussion for you, and just really wanted to get your overall input on our guiding principles, and if you think our guiding principles are helping us get towards measures that will be relevant to dual-eligible beneficiaries.
Thanks so much. Any comments or questions for Aisha are welcome at this time by the work group members.
This is Jati Indave from Tufts Health Plan. So I think overarching reflection on dual eligible population is we have a higher prevalence of mental illnesses and probably have higher mortality in general compared to the remaining population. So the measures related to palliative care, as you have incorporated, probably have higher impact in our population. And the measures which requires member surveys probably will have more noise than real accuracy due to the cognitive impairment prevalence in our population. So you may want to consider the member needs or member population as we go forward.
Thanks. Other comments, or Aisha, if you wanted to respond to that at all, or any of the work group members are welcome to respond to that comment as well.
This is Sarah at NQF. I can respond to that comment. I think it is a theme we spent a lot of time discussing at our most recent in-person meeting, the need to capture beneficiary experience and the perspectives of an individual and his or her family, recognizing that mental illness is more common in the dual-eligible populations. We're going to have to be creative with approaches to capturing that experience through a variety of methodologies, including but not limited to CAP surveys and other similar methods. So I anticipate that we'll continue to sort of wrestle with our proposals in that area.
Yeah, I think my only request would be, and this is not probably NQF's decision, but the Medicare is, or other payers are putting more weight on some of those measures, which may create some challenges. Because if we cannot really assess those measures accurately, and if they are higher wage, that's going to create some concerns. And second quick feedback is we don't have any, I know we have created a few palliative care measures, but there is no really good pipeline of measures which are ready, at least for the prime time, on palliative care or hospice. Things like a percentage of patients dying in setting of care which they would like to die at, or other measures. I think there's need for creating more in that as we get to know this population better.
Thank you for that. We'll be discussing hospice measures later in the call.
This is Deb Potter. Just a clarification. I couldn't hear what you said about when physician compare was going to be available to the public, or were there measures that were going to be added that aren't there? I didn't understand what you were saying. This would be
This is Aisha. The physician compare site is currently up and active now. Quality measures are not available on physician compare yet. They're scheduled to be quality measures should be available in Physician Compare beginning January of 2015.
Oh, 2015. Okay, thank you.
Yes. And so, as I mentioned before, given the volume of measures, we have not provided specific input on which individual measures should go into Physician Compare, but have come up with these general guidelines, and the clinician work group hopes to reconvene early next year to get to some specific measures.
Thanks. Any other comments or questions? I think just in general, it's really nice that in keeping with our priorities, there's so much discussion about care coordination and the transitions topics. This seems very much in keeping with our priorities as well, functional status, patient experience, et cetera. That all seem like topics that we have prioritized in our conversations. Okay, thanks so much, Aisha. Thank you for your report. We'll move on to the hospital work group at this point. And Lindsay Lang from NQF is going to present, and then Jim Dunford will be giving his liaison perspective from having participated in the meeting. So, Lindsay, go ahead.
Thanks, Alice. Hi, everyone. My name is Lindsay. Please jump in as you did with Aisha if you have any trouble hearing me at all. I'm going to provide some feedback to you on the hospital work group's progress. Similar to the clinician work group, we had a reference document that is available to you all in SharePoint that highlights what's currently on the slide in front of you. The input that you actually gave to us, and we were fortunate enough to have Jim Dunford be our liaison to the work group, and he actually sat with us through the 2 days of meeting last week and provided a bit of an overview around these points that are in front of you now and a bit more nuanced, and then jumped in throughout the conversation to help make sure that the dual eligibles were being considered with our decision making, and we're very appreciative of his presence, and look forward to having him tell you his perspective once I've finished with these few slides I'm going to share with you. So just to refresh your memory quickly on what you had told us as a hospital work group, that it's important for hospitals that they deliver high-quality care to dual eligible beneficiaries by ensuring that care is safe and appropriate. Improvement can be achieved by developing relationships between health systems and community services to reduce readmissions from both community and long-term care settings. So creativity and compassion may be needed to deal with challenges posed by emergency department crowding and frequent users. And considering the heterogeneity of the population, the dual eligible beneficiaries work group encourages broad thinking about the measures of care coordination, patient experience, and outcomes. And so hopefully we were able to hold true to some of these principles that you put forth for us in our decision-making process. On the next slide, you'll get a sense of what the hospital work group covered in their two-day meeting. They actually had 10 programs to consider, though notably less measures overall than the clinician work group. The hospital readmission reduction program and the hospital-acquired condition payment reduction program were both new programs to them this year and actually took up an extensive portion of their time of their meeting. And also similar to clinicians on the next slide, you'll see the hospital work group ended up also developing some guiding principles for applying measures to public proposal and payment programs for hospitals. Hospitals currently don't have a program that is just paper reporting to CMS as their only sort of baseline or mothership program is the inpatient quality reporting program, and that is a publicly reported program in the measures that you see on Hospital Compare. And so they felt that it was important to gain experience with selecting and publicly reporting measures in that setting, within the IQR, if you will, inpatient quality reporting program, and then consider them for the subsequent payment programs unless there was some other compelling evidence to suggest that you move the measures into payment programs much more rapidly instead of just keeping them in the public reporting program for a period of time. I'm sorry, I'm being double mic'd here. I'm not sure if I'm loud enough. I hope I am. Then they have two different types of payment programs generally. The hospital value-based purchasing program actually is already in statute a subset of the IQR program measures, but in this case, the program is structured such that their performance is tied to payment for their performance on the measures, or if they show a large amount of improvement and that score is better, then they receive that score. So there is an improvement component to the structure of the hospital value-based purchasing program, and so it differentiates it then from the reduction programs that are strictly almost penalty programs, if you will. And so when they looked at the measures for hospital value-based purchasing, they thought that they should address areas of variation in quality that also have opportunities for improvement and should address areas where hospitals maybe are a little earlier in their improvement efforts because of that additional improvement component built into the structure of the program, or where there is potential evidence of unintended consequences, they might want to consider applying balancing measures as appropriate in those instances. And also when there are perhaps the optimal benchmark is not known, there are measures that you maybe would not expect to achieve a zero in performance. And so those kinds of measures would also be appropriate for hospital-based purchasing. And then the next slide talks more specifically about those exclusive payment or payment reduction programs. And those happen to be the two new ones they were considering this year, the readmission reduction program and the HAC, or healthcare acquired condition payment reduction program. And they felt the measures should address areas of variation in quality and high impact areas here, where there also is opportunity for improvement. Really what was important here as well was the need to consider overlapping incentives and avoiding potential unintended consequences of the additive penalties. So, the example listed out here is an overuse of antibiotics to avoid the healthcare-acquired infection for that HAC payment reduction program. And they were definitely cognizant of the impact that these penalty programs would have on hospitals that are serving large volumes of vulnerable patients, such as dual eligible beneficiaries. And some additional considerations they had noted were that there needs to be sort of reasonable monitoring for unintended consequences, and also in rural populations that there needs to be some sensitivity for hospitals that have very low volume when they start getting into higher stakes payment programs. So an example here at the bottom of the slide that's on your screen now, I know particularly near and dear to your hearts and dual eligible beneficiaries, is the catheter-associated urinary tract infection and measure, and the work group did support this measure for the hospital VBP program, but they actually didn't want to put it into the HAC payment reduction program, and that's getting at that issue of the optimal benchmark may not be zero, and there would be potentially that unintended consequence of additional antibiotic overuse.
show such examples have the principles played out for them in the decision.
So the next two slides actually are related to the measures that you all have identified within your evolving core set. There were four measures, I believe, that were under consideration by the hospital work group that you have previously identified. So the HCAP measure was actually already currently finalized as part of that IQR, Inpatient Quality Reporting Program, and the Hospital Value-Based Purchasing Program, but it was under consideration for the PPS-exempt Cancer Hospital Quality Reporting Program. And at this time, the hospital work group supported the direction of that measure because a number of the hospitals actually that are included in the PPS-exempt Cancer Hospital Quality Reporting Program are piloting a cancer-specific module of the CAP. And others are using the survey. They certainly did not feel that patient experience and gathering that kind of information wasn't a priority or wasn't important, but they just wanted to let this this piloted version cancer-specific module be fully played out and before they said that it must be included in this quality reporting program. And then they also supported the 3-item transition measure that you all have identified for addition into the hospital value-based purchasing program. It was previously only within the inpatient quality reporting, and now it will be in the they supported it for inclusion in value-based purchasing, which will then tie it to a step payment and improvement structure. And then the other two measures that were specific to your core set were the follow-up after hospitalization for mental illness measure, and the work group did support this for inclusion in the inpatient psychiatric facility quality reporting program. I should mention that this program also applies to inpatient psychiatric units within hospitals as well. They did note that the measure may be burdensome to collect, but it was very important to have this kind of follow-up and to push hospitals to make stronger community links, which was definitely tied to one of the principles you all had laid out for us, and Jim certainly helped to bring that piece of information to the conversation. And they also said that perhaps they want to have psych measures generally within the IQR program because there are many psychiatric patients that are seen just in general medical and surgical floors on inpatient units in hospitals all the time. And then with the hospital-wide all-cause unplanned readmission measure, this actually had previously been finalized for the IQR program, but they were making, they being CMS, excuse me, are making some positive tweaks to clarify better what is a planned readmission and have those excluded from the measure. So the work group did support this to the updated version pending NQF endorsement to be included within the IQR program at this time. So that was my high-level overview of what the hospital work group covered in their couple of days and those measure-specific details for you. But I want to turn it over to Jim. We'll have probably a much more interesting perspective on his experience as our liaison. So thank you very much, Jim, and I look forward to hearing what you have to say myself.
Can you guys hear me all right?
Yeah.
Everybody's okay? All right. Hi, this is Jim Dunford, and it really was a privilege for me to go to these 2 days of meetings and represent the Dual Eligible Beneficiaries Work Group. And I learned a lot, and I came back actually quite enthusiastic. There were any number of people that said, gee, Jim, that's interesting. We didn't have any idea what that duals work group was really doing over there. And so I thought that just my presence alone was actually useful to kind of remind people what we were all about. So, you know, when I first was introduced, I sort of gave a preamble that defined mixed bag, if you will, of dual eligibles and who I was really there to kind of watch out for. And I thought that it was very helpful. Now, can you guys hear me before I go on?
I can hear you. Coming through.
Okay. Alice, can you guys hear me all right?
Yep. Sounds good.
Okay, good. And as you heard, they ended up endorsing more or less all four of the work group measures that we have under consideration. And I was encouraged that the hospital group really identified very significant gaps in patient and family-centered care plans. It really seemed like we were moving into the 21st century, to be honest. So briefly, the physician director is Frank Opalka, who is a wonderful guy. He is a colorectal surgeon and actually directs four hospitals at LSU, although I must say Alice has a slight advantage just because of her friendly nature. And she really is timely. If you know, Alice always wants to get to the museum by 10 after. So the hospital didn't have quite as much of a control as Alice did. So compliments to Alice. But the group was very similar that you might imagine, very bright collection of people, lots of folks involved in the development of outcomes data, and not afraid to point out weaknesses, even of existing NQF-endorsed measures. And sometimes they got caught in the weeds, I must say, a little bit by trying to redefine metrics when they had to be reminded that really wasn't the purpose of the work group. But nevertheless, they were very critical. And there were two things that they were particularly interested in. One had to do with a group of folks who were, if for lack of a better term, trying to sort of defend hospitals from metrics. Sometimes describing them as not useful, insufficiently validated. Sometimes they thought they might be too burdensome, redundant. And then as you heard, for some of these programs that you could actually create double or even triple financial jeopardy. And so therein lay the devil in the details. The other side, I would say the majority group actually said, well, that may be the case in some situations, but we have to we really have to kind of lean forward with a more patient-centered focus because that's really what the purpose of healthcare reform was to the majority. And these really harmonized in many ways. It wasn't like there was violent opposition one way or the other, but people really did understand that, well, let's say, for example, the problem of readmissions is pretty much going to be owned by the hospitals for the time being. They understood that strong community connections were inevitable and that they would have to lean forward and make those. Now, on the slide that you guys just saw a minute ago, you see there were actually 10 different hospital-based programs that they had to look across. And so there was a big grid of across and down, various proposed metrics as well as which programs would be applied to. And as you heard also, there were some where they thought that there should be sort of a starter set, that you should start in something like IQR, then move into value-based purchasing, and not necessarily put it in a punitive category right off the bat, as people tend to think of the hospital-acquired conditions payment reduction program, a.k.a. HAC. So that was the general thesis, and those ground rules had to be defined about 2.5 hours into the meeting because people were really having a hard time trying to identify what were the rules as they went through each of the metrics. So, like I say, there's a concern that these would try to fill separate needs, but on the other hand, that there was an idea that it's possible that some of these would apply across multiple, both reward and, you could say, punishment envisioned programs. Now, one of the interesting things I thought was a conversation about whether small hospitals and large hospitals really had the capacity to do what was being expected, that you really might actually have large, sophisticated hospitals with analytic teams that would be much better in value-based purchasing than small hospitals. And so this idea was, let's try and keep things simple for the CEOs, for the small 100, 125-bed hospitals as much as we can. So a very different view of the world than the duals tend to think about things. Another interesting thing really was a kind of a weighting, if you will, of whether or not it was best to have single measures or composite measures. They were generally in favor of more composite measures reflecting hospitals instead of just having a MRSA rule or a C. diff rule or the central line associated, that they actually liked the lumped programs a little bit more. Now, one of the things, as I mentioned also, was that there was some concern about the reliability of the measures. And I think people have just had to sort of take it at that this is an early approach and that this stuff is going to be refined. We don't want to continue to add new programs in to composite measures when some of them have already been maxed out. And so these aggregate measure sets are going to have to be a cull to make sure that we don't continue to add more and more to them without removing ones that no longer are really effective. There was not a lot of discussion, interestingly enough, about how hospital measures would align with clinicians or with the safety committees. Surprisingly, people didn't talk across too much in the conversation. I think we in the duals do a lot better at actually being able to see our primary purpose as integrative. On the other hand, they were pretty good in being able to identify gaps, and the gaps that they saw in particular were cost and patient experience. So very few measures of cost, obviously, but HCAHPS was considered to be the gold standard, and you heard that some of the hospitals like cancer and psychiatry are actually sort of drilling down and creating their own site-specific CAP surveys, and I think that the hospitals see that that's probably going to be the direction that they're going to go. There may be more focused HCAHPS surveys or hospital surveys in pediatrics, emergency departments, outpatient surgery, and that sort of thing over time. Summing up, there was one other thing that I thought was interesting, and we should take this into account because I think we own this more than anybody, and that is the issue of disparities. There was very little conversation about disparities within communities and within individual groups of people. And NQF had a wonderful handout that they provided to the committee that identified disparities as a gap, but it really didn't come up. And I think that's something that the duals have to kind of come back to and remind the groups, is that even within communities, that there are going to be more difficult issues that are going to be in specific groups of people by race or by other kind of characterization, that I think we have to kind of defend that and make sure that that gap is identified and the tools are there to be able to measure the differences between them. But on balance, the hospitals see that there's connectedness. They may not have seen people connectedness as much of a priority as we do, but they recognize that it's there. I think they appreciated the fact that I was there. As an emergency physician, I was struck by the fact that they had very little understanding of what the emergency department's role was in the hospital. And yet here we are approaching 50% of all hospital admissions actually relating to emergency department encounters these days. And so there are enormous opportunities that I think they saw to start to develop quality metrics in those settings, like emergency departments and outpatient settings. Ironically, they only had two outpatient metrics that they could actually approve, and they were sort of shocked themselves. They had a metric on cataracts and one on colonoscopy, and that's all they really had within the sphere of procedures that are done inside the hospital in environments like emergency departments. So I think they recognized how much more they really needed to do in that area, and probably my presence was helped them to understand that. So thanks again for letting me be there. Any questions?
That was very, very helpful, both of you. Any questions or comments for Lindsay or Jim? Either one would be welcome.
This is Leonardo. I do have a question.
Sure.
Thanks, Jim, for participating there. I'm sure you represented the duals group very well, and I'm sure you represented the problem of super users very well. I have one comment, I guess, and then a question. The comment is just, I think some of these things that you highlight are connected. In particular, the concern that I've heard from hospitals often about how they're just sort of one place on a continuum of care, and if somebody gets readmitted or shows up at the ER, they get dinged when, in fact, there's a whole world out there they can't control. But I think that, one of the concerns we've had as a duals group is precisely the concern around the transitions in and out of that setting. And so if you don't think about transitions as broadly as we have thought about it, you sort of lead yourself into a path of thinking of yourself in isolation and not thinking of yourself in the continuity of the healthcare system. So I'm really happy to hear that that group is really seeing that this is a place where, they sort of have to buck up and put some measurement there. So that I'm very encouraged by that. My question was just about the gap around patient experience and what sense you have of how that hospital group is thinking about the gap in patient experience. What do they think is missing? What, you know, when they talk about patient experience being a gap, what exactly do you think they're talking about? And that would be for Lindsay also, if you have a good idea on that.
Lindsay, you want to start?
Sure. I mean, I can mention that I think that the hospital work group does have the age cap survey, and they did include they actually supported also. It wasn't one of your core measures, but a survey for psych facilities as well. I think they generally support they always support that kind of measurement. I think that what would be even a step further though is getting at more of that engagement piece as well, like shared decision making and things of that nature. Surveying patients on just their experience and their hospital stay is one, you know, component of a much more advanced relationship and conversation that needs to take place.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think it seems that HCAHPS is always the starting point, but there wasn't too much more beyond that I felt that people had even fleshed out as necessary. I think they knew that they had to make connections to the community. That certainly was and this transitions in care was important. But in terms of actually them delineating specific gaps that they could identify, it really was more in particular settings that they were interested. They thought that it was particularly important to have HCAHPS for psychiatry, HCAHPS for surgery, HCAHPS for unique kind of components of the inpatient experience, and that the broad measure of a general HCAHPS survey wasn't going to be sufficient to be able to capture what they wanted. Is that?
Yeah.
Alice, this is Tom Valick. If I could weigh in here on Leo's mm-hmm. question, and I just agree with Lindsay and Jim, but would add in general, we're seeing a call not only from the hospital group in this regard, but also from the clinician and post-acute long-term care work groups about the need for patient-reported measures, particularly patient-reported outcomes, but also patient-reported information about their health status as well. So that, I think, is... It just builds on what Lindsay and Jim also said.
Thanks, Tom. Any other comments or questions for the hospital work group?
This is Deb Potter. Just a couple of clarifications on the two measures, the one that was follow-up after hospitalization for mental illness for inpatient psychiatric facility, and there was this discussion about burden. As this measure is currently specified for testing, and this is one of my day job projects, it's just a claims-based measure. But we are planning at this point to test it in both Medicare and Medicaid claims. So the follow-up to non-claim sources where you would have to go out and do record review isn't part of the way this measure is currently being specified for IPF facilities. The other thing I'll point out about IPFs, and I've shared this with some of you, of the Medicare population that uses inpatient psychiatric facility or IPF units, 59% are dual eligibles, and this is based upon a MedPAC report in 2010. So a group that we all as duals should pay attention to. The other thing is the hospital all-cause admission measures, which are being, you know, people are focusing on them from a care transition, care coordination point of view. I'll point out that excluded from the denominator of this measure are mental health conditions, and I know that is a subject that we in the duals group focus on. So if you think it's going to pick up the churning among the mental health and the behavioral health population, it will not. That's all.
I will offer that the hospital work group did also note as one of our gaps psychiatric or mental health readmission measure.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Any other questions or comments? It's a very helpful conversation, you guys. Okay, thank you, Lindsay and Jim. We're going to move to the PAC-LTC work group, and Mitra Rosenor is going to present first from the NQF staff, and then we'll have Joan follow up with her comments.
Thanks, Alice. Good afternoon, everyone. I also would like to provide the dual eligible beneficiary work group with the high points and themes that resulted from the PAC-LTC work group meeting, which took place yesterday. But first, I would like to begin with reminding the work group on the input that you provided in your guidance document to the PAC-LTC work group, which included the following considerations. PAC-LTC providers can deliver high-quality care to dual-eligible beneficiaries by emphasizing person-centeredness and responsiveness to an individual's goals for care. Second consideration, attention should be paid to delivering support and services in the least intense setting that is realistic for the beneficiary. And also, common themes and points of discussion should include functional status and quality of life. Lastly, dual-eligible beneficiaries work group advocated for background research on the ESRD population to explore the possibility of stratifying measures by dual-eligible beneficiary population. Thanks so much for your input. They have been well received and considered by the PAC-LTC work group members and helped shape their recommendations. Moving on to the next slide. The PAC-LTC work group reviewed and provided recommendations for the programs listed in this slide. There were a total number of 74 measures under consideration across programs, with long-term care hospital quality reporting program having the greatest number of measures under consideration, which was 29 measures, and home health quality reporting program the least amount of measures. Two measures under consideration. I also should mention that all these PAC-LTC programs are paid for reporting and also public reporting programs except the ESRD quality improvement program, which is paid for performance and public reporting program. Moving on to the next slide. After evaluating finalized measure sets and viewing measures under consideration, the work group felt that there are still overarching areas related to the PAC-LTC core measure concept that need to be addressed, such as attainment of goals, medication management and medication reconciliation, functional and cognitive status, patient and family experience objects, engagement in care, and also transition in care. The work group also reviewed 8 measures under consideration regarding readmission and supported the direction of those measures across all sets. All measures except one, which is NQF endorsed, are under development, and CMS is planning to submit them to NQF for the endorsement process soon. I should mention in one setting, the work group advocated for 2 existing readmission measures that are NQF endorsed in lieu of the 2 measures under consideration. Additionally, the work group discussed standardization of readmission measures across different programs to create better alignment across settings, as well as customization by risk adjusting the measures based on different populations served by each set. Next slide. So the work group members also expressed the need for structural measures and recommended that program measure sets should expand beyond process and outcome measures. For instance, including workforce considerations across settings by evaluating consistent staff assignments and staff competencies.
another important structural issue that the work group felt needed to be addressed across all settings is a lack of health information infrastructure to collect and report data. Additionally, numerous gaps remain in measures that focus on individual goals for their care, such as goal-directed care coordination, patient-recorded outcome measures on pain management, and goal attainment regarding individual plan of care. Next slide presents the outcome of the PAC-LTC workgroup discussion related to those evolving core measures on their consideration for the PAC-LTC program. The first session of Chair 0097 presentation addresses core concept, the PAC-LTC core measure concept of adverse drug events, but this measure is not specified for the LTAC setting. So the work group gave a measure support direction. The next measure, edge caps, which was also under consideration for hospital program, this measure also addresses a very important core concept, PAC-LTC core concept, which is patient experience. But this measure also is not specified for the LTAC system. So the work group supported the direction of this measure. The third measure, three-item care transition measure, also the work group supported the direction for this measure. This measure addressed transition planning. this measure is not... I have a little bit of cold. And this measure also is not specified for the LTAC setting. So the work group also supported the direction of this measure. The next measure, CAP, in-center hemodialysis survey, also the work group provided a strong recommendation for this measure and supported this measure. This measure is specified for the ESRD population. The next two following measures, transition measures, they also address core concept of PAC-LTC, which is the transition transition planning. But these measures they have not been specified for LTAC settings, so the work group supported the direction of these measures. And the last measure, hospice and palliative care treatment preferences, the work group supported this measure along with the other hospice measures under consideration, as these measures were recommended in the MAP hospice and palliative care coordination strategy. And so the work group provided a strong recommendation regarding these measures. Now, I would like to invite Joan Solotnik to share her perspective as a liaison to the PAC of work group, as well as Beth Potter and Juliana Preston, which were present in the meeting, and a member of the PAC LTC work group, to provide any additional thoughts. Thank you so much.
Great. This is Joan. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay, good, because it's hard to tell. The meeting was only yesterday of the PAC long-term care group, so I think it's taken a little bit of quick processing time. But some of the observations that were made in terms of the experience with the hospital group are true here as well. You know, certainly the group welcomed the participation of, you know, a representative from the dual eligible beneficiary group. And I think I was partly struck by the difference in the group. It hadn't quite dawned on me so much how the other work groups are all about settings and we're about population. And it was also really interesting because there were so many more people attending the meeting from CMS. You know, the room between NQF staff and members of the public and people from CMS. the room was quite full, and we don't have that at the dual eligible beneficiaries group. I thought I want to reiterate the comment made about attention to diversity. I thought that was something that was really missing in the discussion at the PAC long-term care group, and it's something that really needs to be further highlighted. As a matter of fact, there was a comment made at one point when in listing sort of criteria for measures, one of the things is around cultural sensitivity, and someone made sort of a passing comment, well, I assume they all are. And, you know, my response would be, I would assume most are not. So I think that's something that's important to really continue to focus on. Because the PAC long-term care group is covering so many different settings, and we were going over so many measures yesterday, it was a very boom, boom, boom meeting without a lot of process time. But what you see in what Mitra just presented is that some of the measures that we had endorsed at sort of a high level as concepts that need to be included in those particular settings, the PAC long-term care work group you know, talked about sort of supporting the direction, partly because those measures hadn't all been tested in those settings. And so that became sort of a part of the conversation. I think the issue that Mitra had around this whole issue of alignment and needing to do a better job of ensuring that in each of the settings that there are measures related to care coordination and patient and family preferences and sort of involvement and more person-centered, person-directed care were things that were really missing in many of the measures for the array of PAC long-term care settings, and something that, you know, has been such a core discussion among the dual eligible group. So those were some, you know, key things. I somehow was expecting, I think, a little more attention, you know, to some of those issues around transitions of care and care coordination, and they were coming from people who are more sort of on the advocacy group representatives than from the provider groups, necessarily, the people who are representing the providers. So I think it's something we really need to be diligent about. And I think also this whole issue of structural measures, you know, what are the things that we need to put into place around who's a participant on a team, who's required, how does that affect outcomes besides the health IT issues are really critical. And then, and another thing that was discussed, and this is not specific to the dual eligible beneficiary work group, but was very present in the PAC long-term care discussions, was that we were focusing on the MAP work around outcome measures and some questions that kept coming up related to how these link to the conditions of participation, which are kind of minimum requirements, how these things also relate to the growing impetus that there is out of the ACA for the QAPI programs, the quality assessment performance indicator efforts, and what are going to be the issues around sort of reporting burden if these things don't all align together. So those are some of my observations, and I, you know, had the benefit that both Deb Potter and Juliana Preston, as members of the dual work group, were also part of the PAC long-term care group.
Thanks so much. Deb and Juliana, do you want to offer any comments as well?
I think Joan got a real good overview there. One thing I was struck with, and a lot of people mentioned it, was, again, this issue of alignment. Like, why are we measuring pressure ulcers one way at a nursing home and in home health another way and in this setting another way? You know, the need to align those types of things. There was also a call for fewer measures, that there were, in some of these programs, already many, many measures, and, you know, that CMS should consider reducing some of the number of measures and then work in areas where we have measure gaps.
Thanks. Juliana?
Yeah, just sorry, I lost my voice on the plane ride home last night, so you have to excuse me. Just a couple of things. I think right on target with what they had to say, with what Devin had to say. But just to add, I think there's regarding the alignment. For me, I think one of the challenges with the long-term care group is just how there's multiple settings, and then trying to align just within those multiple settings, let alone with, you know, say our dual eligible population. So I still am not seeing certain things that for me I think are really important. I really like to see stronger care coordination, stronger advanced directive planning, stronger advanced care planning, kind of aligned all throughout. And I think that also, if we had more of that, that really impacts this work group as well. So that's the only thing I had to add.
Yeah. Well, one more thing, even though it was mentioned already, it was mentioned many times during the meeting, is if we're going to do care coordination, we need to have the HIT infrastructure to do it. And none of these settings are plugged into meaningful use. And so how are we going to coordinate if they're not part of the meaningful use discussion?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Gosh, thanks so much. Do others have questions or comments for the post-acute long-term care group?
Hi, this is Clark Ross. Just an observation on the last two reports, if I heard correctly. The hospital work group did not address disparities, and the long-term care group, diversity was missing. So if these are common themes, this is something that our work group might want to have a special focus on, diversity and disparity.
Yeah, thank you. I was thinking the same thing, Clark. Thank you for saying so. Any other comments or questions?
This is Deb again. Sorry to hog the conversation, but one thing that we as a dual group want to think about with respect to the post-acute care kinds of settings is how does a health plan go about choosing PAC settings to partner with? And, you know, might be something for us to think about down the road. Do they use the measures that are currently there? Do we need additional measures? Do we need some structural measures that are specific to those kinds of things? Just throw it out there.
Yeah, that's very timely for the kind of work that the demonstration states are doing right now. Deb, thank you for bringing that up. Just in terms of, you know, building the right network and making sure to achieve that balance between having high-quality performers versus trying to meet the requests of all of the different beneficiaries who might want to sign up, really timely.
This is Anna. I was planning to add to that, actually.
Oh,
can you
say again?
Yeah, I was planning to add to that. So another thing that I know has come up in California is that there is a great number of nonprofits and community-based organizations involved in the care transition process and concerned that they're going to kind of be left out of the equation and that all of the care transitions are going to be really evaluated based on the care coordinator at the health plan level. And that seems like a pretty big measurement gap area. And with all the dual states pretty much having money follows the person contracts and utilizing a lot of nonprofits, it seems like there's a missing area there. And I'm not sure if it's a structural measure or it's, you know, what exactly it would be, but.
Yeah, that's,
Also, this is Joan. I think one of the other issues that came up related to that yesterday was that a lot of the measures were at the clinician and facility level,
mm-hmm.
and there weren't a lot of measures also at the health plan level, yet just as you were saying, that's where a lot of the care is getting sort of organized. So that was a real gap.
Mm-hmm. This is Jim. I would just again echo that. I think some of the most successful programs are where the nonprofits and the faith-based organizations are actually starting to take hold, and we don't really have a means to measure that. If you look at the Camden Coalition and how they bent the cost curve for the most expensive people, the whole concept of hotspotting and Jeff Benner's project, it was really done completely in the grassroots with faith-based organization participation. And, we have to have those. And then there are many other opportunities where we can measure in communities that we haven't identified.
Yeah.
I was on a meeting this morning for an hour talking about community paramedics to try to fill gaps, not to replace visiting home nurses, but to do other valuable roles for vulnerable people in communities where they actually are all the time.
You know, that also gets back to the issue of structural measures that are missing about, different provider structures beyond physicians.
Right. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. A very helpful conversation, and I'm sure we'll build on this theme in the meeting when we get back together. Thanks, all of you, Mitra and Joan, Deb and Juliana. Thank you so much for your participation in the work group and then sharing with us today. Very helpful. Sarah, we're going to turn to you next to talk about where we're heading next in our own work group.
Okay. I would be happy to share the next steps with everyone. So, as you've heard a little bit about, the coordinating committee in its executive function over MAP will be hearing from each of the work groups at its meeting in January. So this group's feedback will be a component of the coordinating committee's major strategic discussions around the alignment of measures and filling measure gaps. So our unique view of looking at the experience of dual eligible individuals across the continuum really helps to drive those points home. And in particular, where measures have been included in a core set or a family, we've seen that it's sent an important signal that helps to distinguish them when they get mixed up among hundreds of other measures under consideration. So as I've sat in the audience for every MAP meeting over the past 2 weeks, it was really heartening to see the core and families really help to drive decision making. So from the duals evolving core, 12 measures had been previously finalized in two or more federal programs, and an additional 6 are finalized in one program. And 19 core measures were under consideration this year. Some of those are duplicates of measures that had previously been finalized, but they were potentially going to be included in more programs. And all of those were supported or supported in direction by MAP. So this is a really clear and tangible progress in increasing the use of measures relevant to dual-eligible beneficiaries. I think the comments from the liaisons and the staff here reflect that we're not done, but that important steps have been taken over the past year or two.
Sarah, you're kind of breaking up. I don't know if you can...
Let me reinforce my microphone situation. Bear with me a moment. I hope that's better. So please stop me if I continue to have audio issues. So in her presentation to the coordinating committee, Alice will be highlighting how your group's 5 high leverage opportunities and the evolving core measure set help to execute on the national quality strategy. And there's also something to be said about using the right kinds of measures for the right purpose. And analytics presented during the rulemaking process, together with the principles that emerged from the hospital and clinician work groups, plus the measure collection criteria, it's very clear that MAP was more deliberate and sophisticated in the choices that it was making this year. And as I said, we're not there yet, we're not done, but the conversations around fit for purpose seem to have really progressed since this time last year. In terms of measure gaps and what's to be done about them, this will also be up for discussion at the coordinating committee. This group has identified many measure gap areas. Other work groups and task forces have done the same, and all of those gaps, which altogether span possibly close to 10 pages, were organized by the NQS priorities, consolidated a little bit, and provided as input. Some additional gap ideas did emerge from the meeting, and in other cases, previously identified gaps were underscored as especially important. Three examples are on the slide. Care, functional status, and mental behavioral health. We've heard a few other topics come up throughout this call. And so I pretty much at this point want to stop talking and hear from you if there are other issues or questions you would like to make sure Alice includes in her remarks to the coordinating committee. Just to reiterate a few themes, I heard care coordination and transition. I heard different approaches to patient and family engagement and what's really meant by that. The need for awareness of behavioral health needs in all areas, cultural diversity and issues, and also more attention to advanced care planning. So at this point, I think we're open for discussion and questions.
So, Sarah, work group members first, do you want to just chime in on that last question you posed, and then we'll open it up to public?
This is Cheryl, and I know I've been quiet. I've really been taking all this in. It's wonderful to have heard your experiences and to get all the feedback from the different groups. I think it's probably worth mentioning somehow that issue of the other work groups would be, that the work would be enhanced by their focus a bit more on the alignment across settings as well. That seemed to be a theme that was coming out too. But did want to just say thanks to everybody. This has really been a great discussion and has given us, I think, a lot to think about. So thanks.
Thanks, Cheryl. Any other members of the work group, any last comments before we turn to public comment?
This is Anne. I just want to make sure that, Sarah, that you capture my last comment about in terms of long-term care and maybe it applies to other areas, that assessments, quality measures could be applied to community organizations, not just plans and providers.
Certainly. Thank you.
This is Joan. I'd like to just reinforce that because I think one of the other things that we were talking about at the end of the day yesterday related to the PAC Long-Term Care Committee, that it was very focused on facility and not really thinking about it in terms of long-term supports and services that take place in the community.
Yeah. Yes.
This is Clark Ross. Choices of words. It would be nice if our work group could consistently use long-term services and supports rather than long-term care. I know changing the other work group's name isn't realistic, but maybe we can just send a message by consistently using long-term services and supports. And second, when we're talking about advanced care planning, if we could consistently use also the concepts of consumer empowerment and self-direction over and over and over, we might be able to educate some folks.
Thanks, Clark. I wonder, you know, just from that conversation that we just finished up, And I'd be interested to hear Joan's thoughts or the NQF staff as well. You know, I guess when I also find it helpful if we are just talking about facility-based care that we do just call it long-term care to distinguish between the spectrum of long-term services and support so people don't think that you're talking about the broad spectrum when really the work group's work has been so narrow on the facility. You know what I mean? So I kind of go back and forth on that question, Clark. Sometimes I try to use long-term care when I'm specifically talking about the facility, and maybe what we should just call it is facility-based care.
Yeah, this is Joan, and we've had this conversation internally here at NASW in terms of language, and we tend to use long-term. We are trying to move to long-term supports and services, but then if we do use long-term care, we use it very broadly as an array. And so I think using some term that kind of is related to facility when you're talking about buildings, I think is useful, because if you use long-term care and make an assumption that it's about a particular, you know, facility, nursing home kind of thing, I don't think that's where everybody is, so it gets to be very confusing.
Yeah. Yep. Thanks, Joan.
This is Clark. I just want to reinforce what Joan said. The end point is not the facility.
Right.
And the end point is not care. The end point is services and supports to allow people to function wherever they can to the maximum able. So it's just use of words as educational messaging.
Thank you. Yep. A couple comments that also had come in, just to make sure, Sarah, that you're capturing earlier in the conversation the comment about making clear to the group that, you know, whatever concerns we have about when cognitive impairment or mental illness comes into the picture, not to assume that that means that you can't collect person-centered, you know, experience of care kinds of measures. So just wanted to make sure that that comment was brought up, and we'll cycle back to that at, when we get together in March. The other comment is about assessment and care planning, that they remain high on the priority area list for gap filling. So so we'll take that. I would like to open it up now for public comment. If the operator could give any instructions to the public audience about how to make comments, that would be great.
If you would like to ask a question or make a comment, please press star 1. And you have a question or a comment from the line of John Shaw with Next Wave.
Thanks, John. Go ahead.
Hi. It's very interesting discussion today, and I've been in on some of the other calls and attended many of the in-person meetings. I've come to a realization that we have a problem here in communicating and measuring things. And if you look at the triple aim, better care, better health, and affordable cost, for two of the three, we've got a lot of data. A lot of it's electronically reported through HIT and so on. The middle part that really affects the dual eligibles is better health and many of the issues that were discussed on the call and in other meetings. And we don't have data. If we look at, I've been trying to find ways of measuring a lot of the concepts of social complexity and social supports and informal care supports and so on, looking at the same thing with the mental or behavioral health. Our difficulty is not a gap in measures, but a gap in data to be able to use to risk adjust or stratify measures that are in use. the biggest example is the rehospitalizations. And after yesterday's call, rehospitalizations targeted to apply across all settings. But the issues we've been describing that differentiate more difficult processes to provide long-term services and supports, we can't measure those things because we're used to, on a public health side, relying on the surveys like BRFSS and NHANES and MEPS and so on. Mm-hmm. And the problem they have is they're limited to 30 to 50,000 data points across the country. So at best, we get to the state level. And if we're looking at healthcare more focused down to the community level, like Camden or areas of California, or we're trying to do something like that here in Albany, New York, we don't have any data to really address the complexion of what's inside that public health side of things. It's too soft. It's too fuzzy. And so one of the things that we might identify is take some clues from some of the materials at the back of the October 11th and 12th package, talking about looking towards the future, particularly the one that's the multiple chronic condition and disability framework. In there, they talk about social complexity and socially complex illness management. And we talk about diversity and cultural sensitivity. A huge gap for that middle leg of the triple aim is data to be able to understand and target and address things on the public health side of things. And so finding ways of expanding the granularity of data to use to fill the gaps in there. And so one of the things that we're going to suggest in more detail in writing to Tom and so on is there are some measures that could be available addressing some of the critical areas that we see in risk adjustment on a lot of the clinical measures, things like obesity and smoking and activity level. We have a mechanism to collect that data. That data exists in everybody's chart, but we don't collect it. And that is, we have ICD-9 codes for all of those. We now have, with the latest data sets, we have 25 diagnosis positions in the administrative data sets, where we used to only have 9 or 10. So there's room to collect the data, but it doesn't fit right now the definition for what's reportable as a diagnosis on a individual encounter claim. And that's talking about what really affects the care during this encounter. And part of the light going off is looking at some of the episode data that's become available more recently. And we see things like for obesity, we've been trying for years to understand the dynamics of how that affects care. And what we found was the big impact of obesity, particularly stage 2 and above, the BMI of 35 and above, really impacts on rehospitalization and use of what we call post-acute care beds. So we differentiate the institutional versus other long-term care as post-acute beds or long-term beds versus non-bed, community-based. And there we see some huge differences. And that could be collected because BMI is either in or available in everybody's chart for every single encounter that's out there. But we have no data except at the individual inside of the individual facility because we don't collect it anywhere. So,
Can I have you pause a second? I wonder, Deb Potter, if you have a thought about that. I'm just turning to you because I know that it's something that you have paid attention to in the past, and you can just pass if you don't want to comment. But I mean, the reason that I ask is I was just thinking, you know, in health plans that have been collecting HEDIS data for the Medicaid-only population, it seems to me like this is a ripe opportunity. I'm quite sympathetic to your point because there certainly are, you know, states that require BMI collection now, a handful of states that do for their managed care plans. And so, you know, depending on the system of care that people find themselves on, you wouldn't necessarily have to rely on the intersection of public health data and hospital data and clinician data and purchaser data. You could actually have it all kind of funnel up through the state Medicaid agency. It's a really good comment, and I think we should spend some time thinking about that notion. I look forward to seeing did you say you're going to submit something in writing about this?
Yeah, I'll submit something in writing on the easy lift on the administrative data side. The other point is sort of cross-agency.
Mm-hmm.
Can we come up with some investments to feed to ARC and CDC and so on to improve the sampling frame for NHANES and BRFSS and MEPS and so on to become more granular, to get down to closer community, at least the MSA or metropolitan area, to be able to focus some other things like the functional status, like the patient-reported information, like health status and frame of mind. And there's great information that we're collecting on a national basis, but it's only good for national samples. So expanding that would also help, and that's probably a message for Cheryl to take to her colleagues in another agency.
I was going to say that too. Yeah, that's a really helpful message for Cheryl and our other federal partners.
I would also add that there's work by the federal government in partnership with many around the country to build what's called an all-payer database, and it may be worth having the NQF staff talk to people at the department about where that is in various places and how down the road that might be able to be used, because we, the duals group, do try and focus on the population and not the settings, and that might be a way to come about it.
Yeah.
And the other suggestion for Cheryl is there's a lot of duals demonstration projects that are going to be going on across the country. And the quality reporting for them is a little bit up in the air yet. Could we make some critical public health items part of the mandatory reporting there as well? Just a thought.
Yeah. Thanks. I see that we only have about 10 minutes left. So Alexandra Cruz sent in a message via the chat box, so I'm hoping that Mitra or one of the other PAC-LTC work group members can address this. And the question is, can someone briefly speak to how the discussion went with the PAC-LTC work group regarding duals work group input to conduct research on the ESRD population to inform possible measure stratification by dual eligible status? So did that topic get thorough enough discussion for you all to make a comment about that, or should we follow up at a later point?
This is Sarah. I can just touch on that. It wasn't a topic of great or deep discussion at the post-acute long-term care workgroup meeting. They were focused instead on reviewing about a dozen, if I recall, specific measures under consideration for the ESRD program. So there was, I think, an unspoken agreement that baseline research, which the dual eligibles group had requested, is necessary before, you know, moving on with exploring stratification. So we'll have to wait and see where that will take us.
Great. Thank you.
Alice, I have an email public comment, if I could read it to the group.
Go ahead.
It's from Tom James, who was participating as a public member from his new role. He writes that he wanted to point out that for health plans, measures of care coordination of medical conditions and behavioral health issues are very important, but also that such measures should be deployed only if the health plan manages both the medical and behavioral health benefits. Mm-hmm. When the commercial health plan or the state Medicaid program, he writes, e.g. Pennsylvania, carved out mental health benefits, then because of HIPAA, the data cannot be put together. So such measures should be written only if a Medicare, Medicaid dual member has coverage for both physical health and mental health under the same payer. But we do need this type of care coordination of medical and behavioral health for all, but for especially the dual eligibles. Hope you are all doing well. So just wanted to share that. Thanks.
Great. Thanks. Thank you, Tom. Operator, do you want to give one last chance to folks on the phone to ask a question?
As a reminder, to ask a question or make a comment, please press star 1. And you have no further questions?
Thank you so much. We'll go ahead and move to the last set of slides then. We just want to remind you about what some of the next steps are. Next slide, please, Sarah. First of all, the interim report you saw in its draft, many of you did send comments in. Really appreciate the work that people put into the review of that document, and that each individual had a chance to weigh in. We also had comments from CMS and appreciate that feedback as well. It's moving through pre-publication and layout, and by the end of the year will be available on the NQF site. There's going to be a public comment period of 30 days in January before it goes officially to HHS. So any other things that you want to say about that, Sarah, before we move on?
Just that the public comment comes after it's officially gone to HHS, but that the group will incorporate the comments as we move forward with the continuing work.
Oh, thanks. Thanks for the clarification. Okay, next slide. We just wanted to also make sure that you have the dates of the upcoming work on your calendars. We don't have the probably most important dates set in stone yet. Mid-February, we're doing the web meeting of this work group, and then mid-March, we'll have our in-person meeting. And you should see a comment email about that from Sarah just in the next few weeks. So once you get those dates, really appreciate if you get those locked into your calendars, and we'll try to make the decisions as fast as we can. So if there's any flexibility at all on your end, we would appreciate that. And then the final slide is just to thank all of you for your participation today. A really helpful, rich discussion. Thanks again to all of the Duals work group members who served as liaisons to the other MAP work groups, and for chiming in today and participating to let us know what those conversations were like. Sorely apologize to those of you who might have risked your health and voice in the participation in the other work groups, and hope that all of you recover in time to have healthy, happy holidays. Sarah, any last comments for the good of the order before we close up?
We'll add our thanks on behalf of the staff. Happy holidays.
All right. Thanks so much, you all. We'll speak again soon.
Bye-bye. Happy New Year.
Ladies and gentlemen, this does conclude today's conference call. You may now disconnect.